Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Benny Grab podcast. Well, I told you last time that I wanted to release these episodes around the end of each month or the beginning of the next one. And being the punctual German that I am, I'm already about 2 days behind schedule. But there is a good reason for that. As I mentioned in the last episode, I'm currently in the middle of moving both my studio and my home. So these days are filled with not only playing drums occasionally or pad, but I'm also building holders for acoustic panels and drawing room acoustic plans, moving boxes around and doing all kinds of things that suddenly become very important when you're creating a new space. Also cleaning some spider webs, by the way. Anyway, but that delay shouldn't be to your disadvantage. Quite the opposite. While I'm preparing the next guest interview for next month, I was thinking about how could I still give you something valuable in the meantime. First of all, thank you for all the great feedback I've received since the last episode. It seems that quite a few of you have checked out my book, Effective Practicing for Musicians, which is wonderful to hear. And in many ways, I think of it as a companion to this podcast. So thank you for the support. What fewer people seem to know, though, is that there's also a complete audiobook version available at bennygrab.com, narrated by yours truly. So I thought I'd share a little gift with you today. What you're about to hear are two chapters from the audiobook for free. They're easy to jump into, packed with practical ideas, and both revolve around a topic that feels especially relevant to me right now. How to keep practicing when circumstances aren't ideal. One chapter is about finding ways to practice when your setup, your room, or your situation isn't perfect. The other explores ways to practice even without your instrument. Yes, that's possible too. And sometimes it really makes a lot of sense. Whenever you're traveling between practice spaces or simply trying to make the best of the time and resources you have available, I hope these chapters give you some useful ideas and inspiration. One thing before we get started. Because these chapters come directly from the book, they have a slightly more workshopish and interactive feel to them than a typical podcast episode. So as you listen, don't just think of this as something to consume passively if possible. There are some key takeaways and some practical ideas in there that you can treat almost like homework assignment. Things that you can immediately apply to your own practicing or your environment at home. So don't hold back. Try this stuff out. Experiment with it because, as always, the real rewards don't come from hearing ideas. They come from, as you know, putting them into action. So with that in mind, sit back, enjoy, and let's jump right in. Practicing anywhere. Although it's ideal to practice in an environment that feels nice and comfortable, complete with all the resources we need, we shouldn't fool ourselves into thinking this is the only way to be productive. The feasibility of practicing an instrument is usually determined by three factors: the size of the instrument, the volume it produces, what the neighbors usually call noise, and its portability. Or immobility, as the case may be. The bigger, louder, and more cumbersome your instrument, the more limited your practice opportunities may seem. But we can drastically expand our practice options by being resourceful and identifying smaller, quieter, and more portable alternatives. The ironing board in Chicago. I will never forget the time I was invited to perform at a drum festival in Chicago. Master drummer Steve Smith and I were scheduled to close the show with a duo piece using brushes as an encore. As usual, there wasn't much time to prepare, and since we hadn't seen each other in a while, we planned to meet backstage for a rehearsal where the other acts were performing on stage. Since the sound generated by a couple of snare drums would clearly be too loud during the show, I resigned myself to the idea that we would just discuss the form of the piece and agree on certain cues. At least it's better than nothing, I thought.
When I entered the backstage area, there, among the usual sagging couches and Hollywood light bulb mirror, was Steve, smiling with brushes in hand. "Hey, Benny, remember when we did Salt Peanuts with Jaff Hamilton a couple of years ago? Come on around the board here. Let's play it." Before I could stammer the, "What? Board?" he started to casually play a swing beat on an ironing board that, to my ears, produced the sweetest brush sound I had ever heard. This stupid household item, which can be found in most hotel rooms, delivered all the nuance and responsiveness you could ask for. It was beautifully quiet and, as an added bonus, even stood at a comfortable height for playing. This is resourcefulness, the opposite of, "I would if I could, but I can't." To finish the story, that night we actually ended up performing the piece on the ironing board on stage, and Steve, the ironing board, and myself received a standing ovation. I believe in that order. Ever since that experience, I tend to view hotel rooms and green rooms as merely a big playground of surfaces that offer different degrees of rebound for different practicing purposes. You might say, "Well, sure, drummers have it easy here. What about my upright bass?" I hear you, but at least you don't need a PA and an electrical outlet. No single trick or piece of equipment will work for everyone everywhere, but I do encourage you to think of some options for your particular instrument that you might not have considered until now. Here are some examples. Drummers can use all kinds of practice pads for both hands and feet, including little ones you can strap to your knee or practically any surface with a towel on it. Trumpet players can use a dampener plus headphones for significantly quieter practice. An electric guitar can be strummed, unplugged, so to speak, almost anywhere. Vocalists may not be able to sing at the top of their lungs when taking public transit, but at least they don't have to haul, set up, and tune any additional gear once they arrive. On the road, I've seen writers and arrangers produce entire soundtracks for film, TV, and ad campaigns using just a mini USB keyboard and a laptop, while others complain about all the wasted time spent waiting around on tour. Find the value in exploring your options. If you haven't already, try to shift your mindset about this. Sure, you can see it as a compromise, as less than the real thing. Some drum educators even talk about the practice pad as if it was a chore that sucks, but one that you have to do in the sense of, you gotta eat your veggies. I've never understood this. For a start, practice pads have actually helped me improve because I find it way easier to hear certain inconsistencies on the pad compared to the snare. And practice pads have gifted me with some wonderfully productive practice sessions, from early mornings at the beach to late nights at home with my son asleep, that I wouldn't have experienced otherwise. Be resourceful and reap the benefits of a whole new world of practicing options. Key points. Number one, consider the three parameters of size, volume, and portability, and how they apply to your instrument. Recognize how they might pose limitations to your practice time. Number two, research alternatives and brainstorm about ways to change these parameters or even free yourself from these limitations. Number three, review the settings in your daily routine and think about how you could transform them into new practice environments. Look at traveling and waiting times, your living space, your workplace, vacation stays, and so on. Number four, set up a satellite or stripped-down practice area in your home, especially if you are used to practicing in a separate rehearsal space. Could you squeeze in some practice time while someone else takes a nap? Number five, develop an appreciation for these alternative practice setups and the advantages they offer. For instance, I made a list of the places and daytimes I can practice with a pad where I couldn't with a real drum set. Number six, Lastly, brainstorm about ways to gain access to a real instrument that you haven't thought of before. Some people conclude too easily that they have to live with a stripped-down version all the time. Could you ask a friend, music school, community center, or church about spending time with a real piano or drum set one night a week or once a month? Ask around. You might be surprised to find your efforts rewarded. Practicing without your instrument. Let's take it a step further. Since most of us think practicing requires spending time with the instrument, we might be overlooking some exercises that could help develop our skills and improve the way we perform. In some cases, it's simply not necessary to have your instrument nearby. But apart from being practical in terms of offering more choices for practicing, I believe it's actually advantageous to do certain exercises away from the instrument. Practicing music in this way can help solve or even uncover all kinds of challenges that have nothing to do with what we usually regard as technique. Identifying tips for focusing on these areas can help us sharpen our musicality in many ways. In medicine, there is a saying, "The correct diagnosis is half the cure." It's so easy to blame our stupid hands or lack of coordination and fine motor skills, when the real problem might be an absence of clarity and vision about what we actually want to play in the first place. This is like a guy who runs to the doctor to find out what's wrong with his vocal cords after he could barely utter something intelligible when his secret crush boarded the elevator. Here are just some ideas. Learning song forms. Have you ever struggled to play a song from beginning to end or a classical piece from top to bottom? Then why not make sure you really know it well so those little moments of doubt don't cause a hiccup and prevent you from playing a passage you could easily play if there wasn't a question mark in your head about what comes next? Particularly with new material, most of our internal CPU becomes occupied with precisely what we need to play at each moment. If you add a dash of insecurity about what comes next, it can overload your system and lead to a crash. This is what happened to the guy in the elevator. His vocal cords were not the problem. His ability to speak wasn't at fault. But when he found himself taken by surprise in a nerve-wracking situation, he simply didn't know what to say. Try this exercise. Pick a song you think you know very well. Pick the right tempo, count it off, and sing it in your head. Don't speed up. Don't slow down. Do you hear the intro in your mind? Exactly how long it is? Does the singing start right away, or do we first hear some instrumental chords? Try to make your recollection of the song as specific and as accurate as you can. If you get thrown off, make a note. Compare it with the recording, and then try again. Don't get discouraged. This exercise can be harder than it sounds. You might discover that most, if not all, of your repertoire is not as clear in your mind as you thought it was, and that's okay. Just repeat it a few times. You'll find that knowing the song better in a deeper way will reduce stress and free up more bandwidth for you to actually play. And to get back to the main point, you can do this without any instrument in sight. Rhythmic vocabulary. It's pretty common for drummers to think they have little to do with chord progressions or melody. We've all heard the jokes that a drummer is not a musician, but the converse is also true of singers, violinists, pianists, and guitarists who think that essential timing exercises just aren't a top priority. Whether you're a percussionist or a classical guitarist, a lot can be done to improve your confidence and awareness of rhythmic phrases, even when away from the instrument. If you need ideas, I suggest you check out The Language of Drumming, available as a book or video course at my website. It offers a simple but complete system to help you prepare for almost any musical phrase that can happen in relation to a quarter note pulse. I'm constantly getting great feedback from guitarists, bass players, and classical musicians who have used this system to widen their repertoire, even though they don't play the drums. GapClick app. Keeping a consistent tempo is another basic skill that is far too often underemphasized in a musician's practice regimen. I suggest that you download a metronome app or program a click that allows you to insert gaps in a flow of notes. This is great for everything from trying to tap out the quarter note through the gap to working on singing phrases over the gap click cycle. By leaving some of the metronome beats silent, it gently forces you to state the tempo on your own. When the click comes back in, you'll immediately feel if you've slowed down or sped up. If you do this regularly, you'll quickly improve and it will serve you well in any style of music, regardless of what instrument you play. If you have a smartphone, check out an app called GapClick, which was designed by a certain very handsome and intelligent German drummer, who's also very humble. But seriously, this app lets you easily select how many bars the click will be audible, how long it will be silent, and whether the click should appear on a different note of the subdivision every two bars. This gives you the ability to test and train your sense of tempo and your awareness and accuracy of subdivision. Again, it's a great exercise that you can do almost anywhere. When figuring out more complex songs, I usually start by clapping on quarter notes the first time through. This way, you'll really feel any possible insecurities or question mark moments that you can attack later. A more challenging version of this is to clap on the offbeat or the second 16th of each quarter note. I could go on like this forever, but I think you get the idea. Anything that deals with tempo, time, and song form is easy to do when away from your instrument. And hey, we have to work on these elements anyway. So why not focus on them when we can't practice anything else? I use this a lot to free up time in the practice room, so that when I'm at the drums, I can focus on the things that really require me to be sitting at my instrument. I hope I've not only expanded your view of practicing without your instrument, but might have even persuaded you of the benefits to working on certain techniques this way. Key points. Number one. Remember that some exercises can help improve your playing and don't require you to have an instrument in your hands at all. Number two, come up with a list of all the ways you could practice without your instrument. Note this isn't an either-or scenario. Some things you've practiced exclusively on your instrument so far can show up here as well. Number three, choose one song you are working on and take a few complete passes only in your head, then play it on your instrument and see if there's been any improvement. Number four, be resourceful. Download a metronome app like GapClick by Benny Grab, which will help improve your ability to keep tempo and heighten your awareness of subdivision, whether you're with or without your instrument.
All right, I hope you enjoyed that excerpt from the audiobook. If it resonated with you and you'd like to continue, head over to bennygrab.com and download the full audiobook version, Effective Practicing for Musicians. And if you do, I'd love to hear your feedback, of course, and learn what you got out of it. I also hope you'll join me again next month when I'll be back with another guest interview from the archives. In those conversations, I always try to dive deep into the practice habits, routines, and learning strategies of some truly inspiring musicians. But whatever you do next, I wish you all the best and have a great day. Thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you again very soon. Bye-bye.